Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark. The Wailing Woman. For the past 10 years, I've lived in St. Anne's in Nottingham, England. Our area is called Stonebridge Park. I've lived here for 10 years, but this ghost story has only been happening for the last 2 years. The street I live on is directly next to the famous Stonebridge City Farm. Between our street and the farm is a public pathway that the locals call the Farm Pathway. This pathway runs right through the farmland and is a public access way to other housing estates. Well, it is on this pathway that the Wailing Woman is heard. To be honest, when it first started, it was the summer of 2004, and we actually thought it was a crazy person going around just wailing, but we soon discovered that it wasn't. The latest encounter was in the early hours of 2007. She was heard two different ways. The most common one is a woman shouting for help, crying out in desperation. Sometimes you hear a man's voice that accompanies her, but the male voice is always much quieter. The other way she's heard is much more disturbing. Her pitiful moans of anguish and pain echo through the air, shattering the night's silence. We heard it another time in 2004. Me and my dad looked out of our bathroom window, which overlooks the path. The woman's cries for help were so close, coming from the path. We expected to be able to see her, but nothing was there. Yet the cries continued. Half an hour later, the police arrived. Someone had obviously called after hearing her cries for help. The police concluded that the caller was a hoaxer, but we insisted the cries were there and that we had heard them as well. The exact same cries started a couple of weeks later, and me and my dad went around to the farm path to see who it was. But as with before, the sound continued, but no visible person was around. The cries then just stopped. They stopped dead. It was over a year, and we had forgotten all about the cries for help. But then in 2005, it started up again, at exactly the same time as the previous year. It was then that me and my dad concluded and believed that these cries were some sort of residual haunting. The fact that the voice was always the same, always said the same things, and that no visible person was ever present led us to believe this. Another thing we noticed was that about 95% of the time, the sound only occurred on Fridays and Saturday nights. It was another great amount of time before we heard the Wailing Woman again. This time it was different. Her cries of pain, anguish, and heartbreak echo throughout the night. I must say this, it is very disturbing to hear, especially in the middle of the night. What's odd is that despite the sound being different, you can tell it is the same woman who is calling for help. Anyway, coming back to the present, they've started up again. It was only last week that the cries for help were heard, and now we have moaning. Is the moaning the spirit of the woman actually haunting the pathway? It is my own theory that this woman was murdered, maybe by her husband or a lover. If this is true, then it is sad, as her long-departed ghost seems to still be suffering the torments of the damned. The Visitor in the Dark. My mother divorced my father in 2000, and by 2001 we were living with her boyfriend and soon-to-be husband, Eric. I was new to his home and the city we moved to. I made friends with a superstitious girl who was not afraid to try something at least once. We were both raised Mormons, and we were both doubting our religion. In an attempt to answer many questions, she and I decided to use her sister's Ouija board. Some of our questions were answered, but many remained unanswered. Slightly disappointed, we went to a room to talk. That night, as we lay in a room, unable to sleep, we began to hear shuffling noises outside of her bedroom door. Afraid to open the door, we turned on the light and watched her door, praying that it would remain shut. Unfortunately, the door did not remain shut. I have heard many stories of doors creaking open on their own, and if the door opened, I just expected it to creep open. It did not. The door violently swung open, revealing the dark hallway. The light in the room did not just turn off. The light bulb burst. We sat screaming in the darkness, hoping someone would hear us and come to our aid. Unfortunately, we were the only living souls at home that night. We ran from our room upstairs and out the front door. We went immediately to our longtime friend's house, where we stayed for the remainder of the night. The next morning, we cautiously entered her room to find her room totally trashed. All of her things were thrown around. The room and her mattress was laying next to her bed. When her parents came home, they called the police and reported it as an intruder. It baffled the police. They didn't know where the intruder entered from, what his motive was, how the light just burst, and that a single fingerprint was found. We thought that we were through with whatever had entered the room that night, but we were wrong. Every night around 2:30 or 3:30 a.m., for the next month, I was tormented. I would hear my name in the darkness and was once even forced awake by my bed shaking. My mother dismissed my stories as outrageous and an attempt for attention. I refused to sleep in my room and was often found on the couch in our living room in the mornings. Then 1 month after the first attack, it just stopped. I began to think that maybe I was delusional and maybe suffering from a psychotic episode. I did my best to just forget, but couldn't. It was like having something lurking just in front of you in the darkness waiting. 2 years later, after putting with an immense amount of bullshit at my mother's home, I moved in with my father and his family. I felt safe at my dad's home and was able to live my life like none of it had ever happened. I was carefree and living on the edge. My dad gave me space, understanding, and time to heal. Once I settled down and finally was free of my burdens, it began again. This time it was more subtle. I would dream about hate and unspeakable horrors. One of my worst dreams was of a young girl committing suicide after being violently raped by her best friend. I would wake up in a sweat, always at 5 in the morning. It still happens today. If I manage a dreamless night, I'm awakened by the whispering of my name. Whatever it is, it has not only attacked me, it has also attacked my friend, who has suffered more than me by far. But the story continues. After I moved in with my father when I was 17, he and his family had just moved from a home in Tremonton, Utah, to another location in Utah. We moved into a house called the Afton Brimmel's House. This is the first time that I had lived in a home that had its own name. Afton Brimhall was a good friend of my father's and grandmother's. He and his wife passed on before I had met either of them. Afton and his wife both died within the home, which at the time did not bother me. Death by this time was something that I had accepted and was more comfortable with than some. When we walked in for the first time, my stepmom, who was also my best friend, turned to my dad and told him that she couldn't live there. She said that she felt like she was unwanted in the house. I felt nothing. My stepmother could not sleep when my dad was away on business, and by this time, I was beginning to feel unwanted as well. My stepmom and I decided to just stick together and not let whatever was in our home bother us. About a month later, business started to slow down and my dad started to spend more and more time at home. As soon as he began spending more time at home, the feelings began to become more actions against us. At this time, not only was I experiencing problems with the presence in our home, but I was also dealing with a can of worms that I had opened at my friend's home in South Jordan, which was when I had experimented with the Ouija board with her. The attacks in our home began with my stepmom and then extended to me. The most terrifying of all these experiences was on my stepmom's birthday. We went to dinner at Trolley Square, together as a family, and to Temple Square to hear the choir sing. When we came home that night and separated to our rooms, I began to notice the usual feeling of being watched in my room was gone. I didn't know if I should be relieved or concerned. Just then, all the lights in the house flickered and went out. When they came back on, every electronic device in our home activated. At first, we thought that maybe it was a power surge, but then it became evident that it was not. We turned off all of our electronic devices, at which point my little sisters were too scared to go to bed. My two sisters shared a room next to mine, so of course, being the wonderful sister that I am, I walked them back to bed. Once in my room, my stereo turned on and began to play one of my favorite songs at the time. Now, naturally, I would not be bothered except for the fact that the song, I believed, was a warning. The band that played this song is CKY, and the song titles Escape from Hellview. This bothered me. Though I loved the song, the message was clear. I quickly turned off my stereo and stayed in my room, feeling if I left in a panic, it would scare my sisters. After a few minutes, the stereo downstairs began to play, with the volume all the way up, the song that I had just turned off. My sisters and I met on the stairs and looked down the banisters at the living room where the stereo was. My dad burst out of his room furious. He began screaming Afton's name. This scared me. He began ranting about how Afton had destroyed a good night and upset his family. I have seen my dad upset and can tell you from experience, you don't want him mad at you. So naturally, my sisters and I sat quietly listening to him rant, trying not to give away our position to my dad. Once he was done yelling, he went to bed. Now, the thing that bothered me the most was the fact that it never happened again while my dad was at home. I believe that Afton respected my dad enough to not attack us while he was at home. 1 year later, my stepmom had had enough, so we moved again. I have never been back to that house and wish never to return. When I think of all the experiences I've had, I realize that maybe it runs in the family. And sure enough, when I started talking to both of my parents, I found out that I was absolutely right. And it leads me to believe that I am more prone to these experiences than others. These are some of the stories that I collected from my family. My dad has only spoken of this story once. I think that it hurts too much to retell it. My dad as a teenager was wild. Some of his stories seem so outrageous, almost that you can't believe them. But you know how stories can get. They get bigger and bigger over time, but no matter what the story, there's always his trusty sidekick. This sidekick was not only my dad's best friend, he was his cousin as well. I think it's better not to give my dad's best friend the name, don't you? Anyway, at the young age of 25, my dad's cousin, aka best friend, died of cancer. His death was dramatic and, as I understand it, painful. About 5 years later, my mother was expecting her third child, but unfortunately she miscarried. My dad was away on business when it happened. When he came home, he shared a remarkable story with us. His cousin had visited him during his trip and he wasn't alone. He was holding a young girl by the hand that my dad can only describe as looking incredibly similar to me. In fact, he admits at that time that he thought that it was me. He said that his cousin told him that everything was okay. And he told my dad, and I quote, "I have her, she is safe with me." It was a great comfort to my dad when he needed it the most. My mother refused to tell me anything that happened in her family, so I went to my grandpa. Grandpa has never lied to me and has always told me what my mother refused to. He said that one of the most incredible experiences that he ever had was when he and my grandmother moved into their present home. My grandpa was having a hard time and was experiencing things that he could not explain. He said that all of his kids were afraid to go upstairs, so he decided to go upstairs to see what was wrong. As he walked up the stairs, he felt the hair on the back of his neck rise. He could feel the presence of something lingering just behind him. He said that he took a deep breath and just kept walking up the stairs like nothing was wrong. He entered the first room at the top of the stairs. The feeling intensified, but he just kept pretending that everything was fine. When he finally got downstairs, he related the story to my grandma. He still to this day claims that if he had turned around, he knew he would have seen it, whatever that might have been. My stepdad's mother had quite a few interesting stories that, though they do not affect me, they are extremely creepy. My step-grandmom's mother moved her family into a larger home due to growth in their family. She remembered that there was always an empty place at their crowded table. I found this odd because her mother had 8 children and yet they always kept a place at their small table open. Why? Because if ever a plate was set in this particular place, it would crack. Whatever was in the home did not allow anyone to sit in that certain spot at the table. The same woman in her younger years lived in a small home just after marrying her husband. She was cleaning her home when she was suddenly attacked from behind. Someone or something was choking her to death. She was not a religious woman, but I'd once heard that if you invoke the name of Christ, nothing unearthly can harm you. So in an act of faith, she invoked the name of Christ. Just after she invoked his name, it stopped. She immediately got up and checked every room in the house. There was nothing. One of my favorite stories is of my uncle and his visitor in the night. He was asleep in his room when he heard a noise and looked to the foot of the bed. There standing in authentic pioneer garb was a young boy who just stared back at him. And as is traditional in my dad's family, it doesn't matter if the world is coming to an end, you just go back to sleep and think about it in the morning. Unfortunately, I could never do that. And those are my family's ghost stories. The Angry Children. I moved into what seemed like a lovely house in Ontario. I rented the basement with my spouse, Jake. It started roughly a month after we moved in, with sounds we could not place and things being moved, entire cabinets being rearranged within minutes. Then a small childlike handprint started appearing on my closet mirror. They started appearing on my bathroom mirror. Things started getting broken. We tried to be friendly towards them, as we had heard the sound of children. We tried to mother them, as we felt sorry for them. All the time I was living there, I was depressed. One day, I saw the boy, John, crying in the corner, and then in the middle of the room, on his knees, crying into my dress. I talked to him, gave him toys, told him it was okay, and things calmed down for a while. Then they stopped altogether. I cleansed the house, and it seemed that they had left. However, it all flared up a month later, worse than before. Jake, my husband, started to get hit, poked, and slapped. I got poked and experienced feelings of sadness, almost like I was dead. I didn't understand it. I started to have recurring dreams of John, the little boy ghost, playing, then dying. He choked to death each time in my dream on an apple. It made sense to us, as where we lived used to be a farm. However, the haunting would not stop. We tried to clean the house again. It stopped for another month, then it got even worse. The physical contact got even more aggressive. One night, my friend Ash stayed over and said she heard laughter and scuttling in the kitchen. She claimed she thought it was my rabbit at first, but then realized the rabbit was in her cage in my room. She said she heard soft crying. A little girl, she thought. She never returned again to my house after that. Another night, Jake was getting poked and hit violently, and he asked if it could hear him. It hit his head very hard. He then said, "Is there something you want me to know?" It hit his head very hard again. All this time, I heard soft noises I could not place. He then asked, "How old are you?" It first hit his head 8 times, then 10, then 6, then 8 again. He then asked, "Is there something you want to show me?" It started to hit him hard. He then asked, "I am going to name places of the house. When I name the place, let me know." He started naming areas. When he said kitchen, it started hitting him repeatedly. He went to the kitchen and heard the garbage rustling and ran back to the room. Then the noises and sounds became louder and more persistent. On Thanksgiving Day, we were enjoying our dinner and the plates and dishes in the kitchen went smashing into the sink. I also had my special wax for my violin smashed into pieces and my goblets all destroyed. Knives were thrown off the walls. Another day I was sitting by the computer and I got smashed in the head by an unseen blunt object. It appeared as though I was getting the rough end of the violence. Yet another time, I was in my house alone and I got the feeling of being watched by something and the feeling that it wanted me dead. I always felt this way in that house after that. One night, me and Jake were lying in bed. By this time, we could not sleep in the dark anymore. We saw a dark shadow appear in the corner and grow and grow. He jumped up, turned on the normal light, and it was gone. I was left with that feeling again. Now, this is where it gets really scary. I started to get the feeling there was more than one thing in the house. I started to get very ill, in my stomach and soreness all over my body. We could not figure it out. I still felt not welcome in my own home, and I wasn't sure what to do anymore. One night, just before Jake came home, I was showering and I thought he came home as I heard him say hi. I yelled back, hi, but he didn't respond. Then I saw a seriously scary face looking through the shower curtain at me. I bat at the curtain, called Jake an ass, and looked out there, but there was no one there. Jake wasn't home yet. I left the shower wet, just in a towel, and sat outside on the stairs until he came home. Another night before he came home, I was in the shower yet again. Jake was due home any minute. He walked into the house, saw me crying, walking out of the bathroom, bleeding from my face. I had been scratched 18 times with perfect lines across my cheek. He calmed me down and I went to the bedroom. He was inspecting the bathroom and in the span of 1 minute, I got attacked again, this time on both breasts. On the top of them, 22 slices on each one. He freaked out, walked me to the bathroom to clean up my face and chest, then turned around for a second, and I get it again, all along my back and spine. They burned like no tomorrow. It was the worst pain I have ever felt, and they also burned for 3 days after. We decided we would have to leave as soon as possible. The night before we moved, I went to bed and woke up in the morning perfectly fine, but my leg was killing me. I couldn't figure out why. Being half asleep, I didn't think to look at my leg. Later in the morning, I wondered why was my leg so sore. I looked down and was so shocked. I had a burn from my space heater on it, the size of my palm. It was a second-degree burn. What boggles me still is the fact that I am the world's lightest sleeper. Jake stirs once in his sleep and I'm wide awake. The burn still hasn't fully healed. It has been 2.5 months and my chest is scarred now. The one thing I'm grateful for is the fact that I'm alive and out of there. And I hope never ever to have another experience like those I had. A series of unfortunate events that made me a believer. Early last year, some friends and I moved from our hometown of Melbourne to a country town named Shepparton. I had to move because I had a place in the university there, and as such, we were pressed for time in finding a house to live in before the first term started. It was very difficult for four young people to find a house. No real estate agent seemed to want to deal with us. Eventually, however, we met a young real estate agent named Jessica, who seemed sympathetic to our cause. She took us around Shepparton and showed us a few rental houses, and it was with some reserve that she showed us the last house in the tour. We fell in love with it instantly. It was just so easy to get landlord approval on this house. Too easy, considering the difficulty we had previously had. We also found out that it had been on the rental market for months with no interest. We joked about it being haunted, but never actually thought it was. After moving in, the first thing I noticed about the house was the uneasy feeling I got when I was home alone. I decided to buy a cat. The second occurrence was by far the most spooky and confusing. It happened to my housemate, Adam. One night when Adam was in bed, he woke up to view a glowing figure standing at the end of his bed, just looking at him. I wouldn't have believed this story had it not been for the picture he showed me on his mobile phone. Sure enough, there was the perfect image of a girl in full color and looking as though she gave off her own light. The only flaw in the photo was a black square which obscured her face. Very strange. We looked at the time at the phone and everyone could be accounted for. We then tried in every possible way imaginable to get another photo like that in Adam's pitch black room, but to no avail. Even when we used a torch to take the photos, we produced nothing more than a blur, definitely no definition. But regardless of this, I still wasn't entirely convinced. Our other housemate, Tommy, was home alone one night as we were all in Melbourne, but she had to work the next day. She was lying in bed just listening to her music and trying to sleep when she heard the enormous sound of the toilet door being slammed. This freaked her right out because she had been to the toilet and always closed the door. She lay in bed terrified with her eyes closed, resigning herself to the fact that she would get no sleep that night because she was so scared, when from behind her eyelids she saw a mass of light, which she described to me as a flash of lightning in her bedroom, and although she was terrified a moment ago, was filled with a huge sense of calm and fell asleep immediately for the rest of the night. A couple of weeks after this, Tommy and I were watching the video diary of My Chemical Romance. and Henry the cat was sitting on my lap. Tony, my boyfriend, had gone to the shops and Adam was at his girlfriend's house for the night. We had the TV turned up very loud, but not loud enough to muffle the sound of the cat food box being shaken in the kitchen. As soon as we heard this, we paused the DVD, looked at each other, looked at the cat, who could also hear it and was trying to go to the noise, and got the hell out of the house. We could still hear the noise as we were running out the front door. As soon as we got to the footpath, Tony's car turned into the far end of the street. This is when I truly started to believe. Aside from these freaky happenings, there have been countless others. I have seen the ghost of the father. We figure that it is a father and a daughter, the father being malevolent, but the daughter harmless. Tony has seen the father and the daughter, and countless noises have been heard. We also did a seance in which my initials were indicated by the spirit. However, it didn't frighten me. I felt a lot better after this, as though I had been acknowledged. I now have a much more open mind and thoroughly believe in ghosts and spirits and whatever else lives out there in the spirit world. The Black Hooded Figure. I met my best friend Diane during our freshman year in high school, which was 1980. We both lived in Whittier. She lived in a house near to Colima Road, and if any of you know that area, you know that there's a lot of spooky stuff that goes on there. Not too long ago, there was a body of a woman found in Whittier. It was right next to Colima Road. She had worked for Coca-Cola and was about to file for divorce. But not only that, she was also about to testify in a sexual harassment case at her work. So nobody knows really who did her in, but there was plenty of motive. But anyway, back to our original story. One day, Diane and I skipped school and we went to her house. She had a very nice house since her parents had money, and I was quite impressed. Well, until I got inside anyway. It was beautiful with a lot of great furniture and big rooms, but something had me bothered, or rather nervous. I couldn't put my finger on it, but I was scared. Diane had to use the bathroom, and I asked her not to. She laughed and said, "What's wrong with you?" Needless to say, I went with her to the bathroom. We left afterwards to go hang out at the mall, and she never said a word about her house. Well, even after high school, we remained best friends, and I was basically a member of her family. One night, I actually stayed there with her. This had to have been in 1986. The same spooky feeling was there, but I got through the night with nothing happening to me or scaring me. Then, a few more years later, either in 1988 or 89, I celebrated Christmas at her house. I saw her sister and husband in the other room talking, so I walked over to join them. They were laughing, so I asked what was so funny, and they told me they were laughing about the ghosts in the house. I said, "What?" They went on to tell me that all of them had felt a presence and finally ended up seeing the thing. Diane said that it got in bed with her one time. She felt someone get in bed with her and thought it was her sister Nancy coming home drunk. Diane says that she was laying on her side and that the person put their arm over her. She looked down but could see no arm, yet she was feeling it on her, so she jumped out of bed and ran to her parents' room. They told her that they had often woken up in the middle of the night to find someone looking into their bedroom from the hall. They said it would never go into their room, but they could see its head looking in. Her sister Nancy actually saw it one night. She woke up with a feeling that someone was behind her. She was facing the wall and said she did not want to turn over and look, but was scared it might be a burglar. So she forced herself to turn over and said she saw a black hooded figure standing there. She screamed, jumped out of bed, and actually ran right past into her parents' room. She was to see it again, but this time in broad daylight. She says she came home from school about 4:30 p.m. one afternoon with her boyfriend and that she forgot her key inside. Well, they found an open window, so he gave her a boost and she started to climb in through the window into a spare room used for storage. She was almost all the way inside when she looked up and saw the black hooded figure walk right by the room she was entering. She yelled at her boyfriend to pull her back fast, and once outside she told them what happened and waited for her mom to come home. The thing eventually did come into her parents' bedroom one night, and the mother was the one who saw it and started screaming for her husband to wake up, but he wouldn't. She even clawed his face with her nails, and he still did not wake up. She managed to run and turn on the light, and it disappeared. I was a bit angry at them for never having told me this from the beginning, especially Diane, because she knew I was afraid that first day I went to her house, but she had said nothing. She said lots of people always got the same feeling when they would go there, and she knew what it was, but didn't want to frighten anyone. They all eventually moved out, and their cousins took over the house. The cousins did not take their ghost stories seriously, but from what Diane told me, that family had been in major turmoil ever since moving there. There is a possible cause for all of this. A friend of Diane's father came over one day and asked them, "What are you guys doing with that?" It was a statue that was found in a Mexican cave, and according to the friend, it is some kind of evil god that people would make sacrifices to. Diane's mom said they bought it at an antique store and liked it because it was different. Her parents didn't believe the statue could be haunted, so they never gave it a second thought. And yes, they did leave the statue there when they moved out. One quick note about that area on Colima Road. One night when I was coming home from a friend's house in 1998, it was exactly midnight, and just as I was reaching the top of the hill, a UFO flew right over the road. I thought at first it might be a reflection on my windshield, but I had already reached the top of the hill where there are no street lights. It's all dark there. The UFO looked like a tennis ball at arm's length and just streaked across my path over Colima Road heading towards La Habra area. UFOs, ghosts, murders, urban legends, all of these are well known around the Colima Road Canyon area. And of course, this is where I call home.